Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 25th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Soups direct new round of Measure Z allocations. Sheriff Hansel opposes release of convicted serial rapist into Humboldt County, and the KMA News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Measure Z, Humboldt County's public safety sales tax, has less money available for new community projects, and that made the Board of Supervisors' job of choosing options for a new round of funding more difficult. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's Measure Z funding for new applications is dramatically less this year, and accordingly, fewer community projects will be funded. The county's Board of Supervisors gave staff direction on Measure Z budget allocations at its April 22nd meeting. Deputy County Administrative Officer Sean Quincy told supervisors that of $13 million of Measure Z public safety tax sales revenue, $12.5 million is to maintain previously funded county staff positions and community programs. Maintaining county staff in key departments, including the sheriff's office, makes up most of that at almost $11 million. And Quincy said, with less Measure Z money for new community programs, there's fewer applications.
In total, the committee this year received 11 applications, which is down by more than half from last year. This makes sense considering that last year there was $4.1 million in one-time funding available, while there is only $1.3 million available this year. The total amount of funding requested this year also dropped by more than 50%. All but four applications reduced their funding requests, while two requests were withdrawn completely.
When supervisors considered which community programs to fund, they relied on the recommendations of the county's Measure Z Advisory Committee. The committee recommends using the $1.3 million in new Measure Z funding for City of Eureka police equipment, a Fortuna Area School Resource Officer, a City of Rio Del Community Resource Officer, and the Humboldt County Fire Chiefs Association. Of that, the Fire Chiefs Association gets the bulk of the funding, almost $1 million of it. But more funding opens up, with the transfer of $407,000 for county roadside brush clearing out of Measure Z and into Measure O, the county's road and transit sales tax fund. During a public comment session, Shelter Cove Volunteer Fire Department Chief Nick Pape, a member of the advisory committee, said that money should be used for new applications rather than county staffing. But despite the funding dilemmas, he described Measure Z as a success.
Measure Z is a success. I know there's been a lot of people saying different things about Measure Z. The hard part about Measure Z is what we're asking for it to do. That's the only failure of Measure Z, is we're asking it to do too much. For the Southern Humboldt Fire Departments, there's 17 of us down there right now. Measure Z is a lifeline. We would not be operating anywhere close to legally without the support that Measure Z has given us over the years. So as far as the three options that you guys have, number two is the best for the fire department, is fully funding us. I know you guys have a hard decision with what's going on financially with the county right now. If there could be an option four, which would be no extra county funds and this fund goes to the non-county agencies, I do believe that is the more difficult task, is how to open up more funding for the non-county agencies. There's no general fund that we can use for that. There's no other funds that we can tap into along the Measure Z lines. I do think that is the more difficult opportunity, and you guys have an opportunity right now to put $400,000 back into the non-county pot that can fund the other projects that were on that list.
Fire Chiefs Association President Rick Nicholson also discouraged reliance on Measure Z for funding the increasing costs of ongoing county staffing.
So we are countywide, Orleans to Shelter Cove, Palo Verde to Oreck, and we serve everybody in between. So again, we're supporting option two with the caveat that that $400,000 come back to Measure Z committee next year for reallocation instead of permanent funding to county agencies. Just a little tweak than what Sean presented, but I think once we start going down to that, there's going to be less and less money available, and we'd be back in that fiscal year 23-24 like we were, where a lot of it was going to county, and that's not what the voters asked for.
A motion to fund the four community projects and move the county brush clearing funding to Measure O and use most of it for next year's Measure Z applications got support. $39,000 of it will be used to increase the Chiefs Association funding. But Supervisor Steve Madrone pushed for funding a water infrastructure project in Trinidad. After some discussion, the other supervisors agreed. The amended motion was unanimously approved. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The proposed controversial release of a sexual violent predator is raising alarm in Humboldt County, with Sheriff William Hansel speaking out against the potential community placement.
This is William Hansel, Sheriff of Humboldt County. And so I was served with a letter on April 3rd, earlier this month, regarding Rich Stobaugh and the Department of State Hospitals wishing to relocate Mr. Stobaugh to an address on Peninsula Drive in Manila. And so we've known about this, and we've for a little while that they were anticipating to relocate Mr. Stobaugh based upon a December 4th ruling by Judge Caleb Cockrum, who ordered the conditional release of Mr. Stobaugh out of the sexual violent predator program, at who's currently in custody at the Coalinga State Hospital. And so we've known since December that this may be coming. And so we just got notified that they found a location and they're asking for input regarding this sexually violent predator coming back to Humboldt County and living in this residence in Manila. So I felt like it was really important for the public to realize what was going on, number one. And number two is to give them the opportunity to weigh in on this location of moving this guy. And so this isn't just some, you know, someone that is on the Megan's Law list. This is a sexual violent predator, a sexual deviant. Richard Stobaugh did some horrendous crimes in the 80s. This is stuff that horror movies are, you know, are made of, where he would lie in wait, he would break into homes, he would force his way into, you know, hotel rooms, dorm rooms, and sexually assault, hold women at gunpoint, violently hurt them, and he was indiscriminate in his victims, you know, all females, but ranging from ages from 18 to 71, and including a pregnant woman. And so this is just, again, the guy is a sexual sadist, as the doctors have diagnosed and redeemed him. And so I just felt it was really important that the public realize that this was happening, number one. And number two, that they voiced their opinion that this guy should not live in this location, in a residential area, around the areas where he perpetrated these crimes. So that's what I did yesterday, and you know, I hope that the public realizes it and they weigh in on this decision.
The Department of State Hospitals recommends releasing Richard Stobaugh under a conditional release program following a December court ruling. When asked if he had any insight into why Stobaugh is set to be released in the Manila community despite the DA and sheriff having expressed grave concern, Sheriff Hansel said,
"Well, I have to say that the Department of State Hospitals made the recommendation to release this person, and to the degree that they believe that he has been rehabilitated. And I have to question that, because someone goes through a 2-year program that offers rehabilitative services in the sexual violent predator program does not mean that they're rehabilitated. We know that these guys are cons. We know that these guys, you know, have all sorts of issues, you know, and so they can manipulate the system in order to get the desired result. And that was to be released. And I believe that's what happened here. Now, I can't undo this. I can't undo Caleb Cochran's ruling. And unfortunately, there's no appeal on this aspect of things, because the district attorney's office, I think, would do that. So now we just have to fight the location. This isn't a good location. I don't have a better location. It's not my job to find the location. But I just know that, you know, putting this guy in the area where he perpetrated these crimes in and around Humble Bay is not a good location. And this guy should not be around women and children. And so though there is some protections, what they call the people that are in charge of the conditional release program, say that there's going to be protections, that may be GPS monitoring, there may be some guidelines, there may be some physical monitoring of having someone there at this location. I don't care. It's not good enough as far as I'm concerned. I don't care how old he is. You know, this guy can still, you know, manipulate his way and do it. And one of the biggest things too, this guy was a prowler, a peeper. He broke into homes, you know. And so I don't know that this guy is actually fixed and this guy is actually not a threat to society. And that's, you know, again, the reason why I'm so adamant about, you know, opposing this. And I question, you know, why the Superior Court would release this guy in the first place.
The proposed location is a residential area in Manila, near schools, parks, and family homes. Sheriff Hansel argues the 16-minute emergency response time makes this placement particularly risky.
I can be upset about his release, right? And I am. But one thing I can do is I can actually, you know, protest where he's going to be placed. I do not think Manila, which is already an underserved community in Humboldt County, why that needs to be the location. And, you know, it's still in close proximity of daycares, of schools. There's recreational areas, there's parks all nearby this place, right? As well as a lot of single family residences and apartments. You know, this is a community. And, you know, why can't it be relocated in an area where has lots of fences and a border and not near all residential areas? And so if he breaks that border and ventures out, then there'd be some kind of a notification. You know, I don't think it's going to be an ideal thing for him to be there. And so I think they should find another place.
The sheriff's office has already received a large amount of emails from concerned residents regarding Stobaugh's release. In light of the heinous nature of his crimes, Hansel said that the root of the issue is California sentencing laws in these matters.
This is the deal with sentencing laws in California. People don't realize this, that, you know, over the last 20 years, you know, it has become easier to be a criminal in California because sentence modifications and the ability for people that have been convicted of heinous crimes that the law decided, you know, would meet a certain, you know, time limit, right? So sentencing law said this guy should have spent 12 years at least for that first rape. He did five. He got out at 5 years. And then the second convictions in 1989, he was supposed to spend 45 years in prison. So why is it that he had got to do half time and he got out, you know, within, you know, 20 plus years. And then at that point in time, the law allowed the district attorney's office to seek what they call a civil commitment. And that was the sexual violent predator civil commitment. So now they have to go to court and have a court trial and that to prove to the court that this guy is a sexual violent predator and should be civilly committed. And the laws are in place for public safety. And so the only way that this guy would get out of prison or out of this sexual violent predator program is if the Department of State Hospitals could prove that he was cured and no longer a threat to the public. And so by going through their different programs in place that he's only recently been cooperative with, going through the programs and then at that point, having a doctor, a psychiatrist sign him off as no longer being a threat. Well, you know, I know the psychiatrist whoever signed him off and these people that actually, you know, used to work with him are not planning on living next to this guy. And so that's where I think, you know, it's just unbelievable that they are recommending his release.
Though the decision to release Stobaugh has already been made, the choice to return the convicted rapist to the community where he perpetuated his crimes can further victimize those affected by his past actions.
state mandates that they gets released back to the community. And let's be frank, no other community wants this guy, right? They don't want, no other community wants a sexual violent predator placed, you know, there. And so unfortunately, you're right, but he could be placed in other areas of the community that is less likely for one of our victims, one of the persons that he victimized, to come across this guy. It's not only the victims, but it's the victims' families and the victims' friends. This guy, you know, has caused a lot of pain and suffering for a lot of people. And so people recognize that. So it's not good for him to be in areas where he could come across one of our victims.
Sheriff Hansel is now urging the public to contact local representatives and voice opposition about the location.
The DA will personally deliver all the letters to the court on the day of the hearing or prior to the hearing. They'll make sure that the judge has all the input from the community. Courts need to understand the impact that this is going to make and that we aren't going to tolerate this kind of, you know, person living in our community in areas that, again, easily accessible by this guy. So don't send it to the courts. They don't want it. They're not going to read it. If you send it to me, the sheriff's office, or the Department of State Hospitals at the address that I put out there, and the DA, we'll make sure that these are hand-delivered to the Superior Court judge who's going to be making this decision.
Sheriff Hansel had these parting words for the residents of Humboldt County.
I just want to say that no matter where you live in the county, I think you need to weigh in on this. And so please send a letter. Please send an email. Let us know your thoughts on this. And you may support this decision. Okay, fine. Well, that's, even though you disagree with me, I will send that letter to the Superior Court judge. But if you are in agreement also that this guy should not live at this location, please send us that information. And then also contact Senator McGuire, contact Governor Newsom, let him know how the laws need to be changed on this. And I can only do so much. The DA can only do so much. We're trying to protect the community. And yet these predators now are going to be back in our community. So whatever you can do, please do it. And then let us know by sending that email as soon as possible.
The public hearing on the proposed residence will be held May 7th at 10:15 a.m. in Courtroom 1 of the Humboldt County Superior Court, located at 825 5th Street in Eureka. Those wanting to submit their opinion on the proposed location of Richard Stobaugh can email the Liberty Healthcare SVP ConRep program at libertysvpconrep@libertyhealth.com or the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at hso@co.humboldt.ca.us and or the Humboldt County District Attorney's Office at districtattorney@co.humboldt.ca.us. Turning to Mendocino, in a decision that sparked both defense and dissent, Mendocino County's Board of Supervisors unanimously approved an amended master fee schedule this week, following a public hearing that laid bare the tension between cost recovery and affordability. While county officials say the updated fees reflect the true cost of delivering services, some residents voice frustration over what they see as excessive charges for basic property-related services. The conversation highlighted broader concerns about transparency, economic impact, and how Mendocino's fees compare to those in neighboring counties. KZYX's Elise Cox brings you this report.
Mendocino County's Board of Supervisors approved an amended master fee schedule this week after a public hearing that highlighted the impact of the fees on residents. Assistant CEO Sarah Pierce defended the increases, saying they reflect the true cost of delivering services. She said Mendocino reached out to five other counties to review fee structures and found a consistent formula.
There was a consistent theme among all. All five counties included a calculation for department direct labor costs, operating costs, and the department's portion of the county A87 cost allocation.
The A87 cost allocation covers indirect support, things like IT services. Pierce noted that the revised schedule follows direction from the board's April 8th meeting, when supervisors asked staff to model what full cost recovery would look like. But for residents like Sienna Madison of Willits, the fee hikes are personal.
Last week I went into the planning department and he looked at my application for borderline adjustment. And he said it was very simple. It's literally 100-foot of fence change, 0.09 acres change. And I'm paying for both parcels because my neighbor will be losing that 0.09 acreage. So for me, that fee, it will be $2,878. That doesn't even include the surveyor. So I looked up the California code. It says those fees may not exceed the estimated reasonable cost of providing the service for which the fee is charged. Then I looked up Proposition 218, and it says revenues derived from the fee or charge shall not exceed the funds required to provide the property-related service.
Supervisor Ted Williams said he supports cost recovery in principle, but he acknowledged the public's frustration.
What I hear from the public and applicants who pay these fees is, of course, the dismay at how expensive it is to do business. It hurts the economy, and it makes a lot of people sidestep the process, which isn't good for anyone.
Supervisor Madeline Klein did her own research and found Mendocino County's fees are comparatively high.
In my general research and checking out how other counties are doing fee hearings and fee schedules, I was looking at Lake County because they're close to us, they're kind of comparable to us, and sometimes their county actually seems to be doing pretty well. And so kind of as Supervisor Norvell was bringing up the bakery permit, that was one that I had kind of checked out. And if I just look at their fee schedule, what they updated in November of 2024, generally speaking, their fees are a decent amount lower than ours. I didn't see anything that was trending higher. Just to use the bakery as an example, that fee did not go up. It's $625. Ours is currently sitting at $800 with a proposed increase to $900. And if we were doing full cost recovery, it'd be $1,500. So I'm not really looking for an answer at this point or time, but just something for my colleagues and I to discuss is how are we going to get to a place where our fees make sense for our community and we feel, you know, assured that they are the best that we can put forth.
Pierce said not all fees increased.
The fees vary drastically. Some increased, some decreased significantly because of some efficiencies we picked up.
And for those that rose more than 50%, particularly in reference to supervisory roles, the county will phase in charges over time to reduce the shock to the public. Supervisor John Haschek asked how the fee changes would impact the county's budget deficit. Pierce said they expect a decrease in revenue of nearly $750,000, mostly due to efficiency gains in the Department of Environmental Health, where a recent time study showed more than $500,000 in savings. Despite the concerns, the board voted unanimously to approve the amended fee schedule. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
In this week's KMA News Sports Report, Ray Hamill brings us details of all the big local sports stories of the week.
The race for this year's Big Five championships in baseball and softball are beginning to heat up as we head into the final 2 weeks of the regular season. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on all of the latest high school baseball and softball news in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including why this will be a big weekend for a returning former HDNL star, where one of the best high school girls basketball players is taking her talents after graduation this year, why it was a good week for College of the Redwoods baseball, and the latest from an exciting HDNL boys golf season. But first up, the race for the championships in Big Five baseball and softball looks set to go down to the wire with three potentially decisive games scheduled for next week. In Big Five baseball, the Del Norte Warriors moved two wins clear of the chasing pack with a 14-0 win over Arcata in Crescent City on Wednesday. The Warriors suffered their first conference loss on Saturday when they split a doubleheader against Eureka, losing Game 1 15-4 and taking Game 2 4-3. They are now 7-1 in the Big 5 standings, with 4 games remaining. The McKinleyville Panthers, however, remain right on their heels at 5-1 and have 2 games in hand. The Panthers, who had a midweek bye in conference play, swept a doubleheader against rival Arcata on Saturday, winning 9-3 and 10-0, just 3 days after falling 3-1 to Del Norte for their only conference loss. The Panthers could move into a tie at the top of the Big 5 standings if they can win 2 games on Saturday at home against a Fortuna team that has struggled in conference play and is 0-7. The Warriors have a bye in conference play this weekend. Del Norte and McKinleyville will face off in a huge doubleheader in Crescent City on May the 3rd in a pair of games that will likely decide this year's championship. The race for the Big 5 softball title is just as exciting, with Del Norte and Fortuna in contention. The Del Norte girls took over top spot with 3 big wins this week, sweeping a doubleheader against Eureka on Saturday by scores of 15-5 and 18-4, and following that with a 9-0 win over Arcata in Crescent City on Wednesday to go to 7-1 in conference play with 4 games remaining. The Huskies, however, are 6-1 after a 10-6 win at Eureka on Wednesday, and they can leap Frog Del Norte in the standings if they can sweep a doubleheader at McKinleyville on Saturday, while the Warriors have a bye. The two contending schools will meet in Crescent City next Wednesday in a potential championship showdown that will likely decide this year's pennant. Also this weekend, both Arcata teams will play doubleheaders against Eureka. In the Little Four, meanwhile, St. Bernard's took a big step towards a conference championship in baseball with a 9-1 win over Ferndale on Thursday. The win lifts the Crusaders to 7-1 in conference play and leaves them 2 wins clear of the chasing pack with 4 games to go. On Tuesday, the Wildcats defeated the Crusaders 9-8 in a thrilling walk-off win, scoring 5 runs in the bottom of the 7th. Ferndale is now 5-3 in the Little Four. Also this week, the Hoopa boys defeated South Fork twice to move 2 wins clear of the Cubs in the race for third. In Little Four softball on Thursday, conference leaders South Fork split a pair of games against Hoopa. The Warriors won Game 1 6-2, but the Cubs responded with an 8-3 win in Game 2 to leave them 6-2 in the standings. St. Bernard's lost a pair of games to Ferndale on Thursday, falling 15-8 and 27-16, and the Crusaders are now 4-4 in conference, with Ferndale and Hoopa both now 3-5 and tied for third. In local college softball, meanwhile, former Big 5 MVP McKenna Beach will make a welcome return to the North Coast this weekend when Cal Poly Humboldt hosts a 4-game series against Stanislaus State in Arcata. Beach, who graduated from Eureka High in 2022, was MVP of the Big 5 in basketball and softball as a senior, and she was named the Humboldt Sports Big 5 Girls Athlete of the Year. She played 2 seasons at Cal Poly Humboldt, starting 93 games for the Jacks before transferring to Stanislaus this year. The two teams will play doubleheaders on Saturday and Sunday. In local college baseball, College of the Redwoods is closing out the season strong. After struggling for much of the year, the Redwoods men have now won 5 of their last 6 games, including a 3-game series sweep at Siskiyous last weekend. The CR men won 5-0, 10-7, and 11-10. Redwoods is now 8-15 in the Golden Valley Conference and 11-21 overall. Switching gears, St. Bernard's 2 sports senior standout Layla Florvillis announced this week where she will be taking her talents after graduation this year. The 3-time Little Four MVP in girls basketball, who is also one of the best track and field athletes in the HDNL, will compete in both sports for Chico State after accepting a scholarship offer. Florvillis led the Crusaders to 59 wins in her final 2 seasons on the high school basketball courts, including a first ever state championship for an HDNL team in her junior year. She also was named the Cal High Sports Division 4 State Player of the Year in 2024. Florvillis also is the defending North Coast Section Meet of Champions champion in the 100-meter hurdles. And rounding out this week, McKinleyville senior Jake Gardner moved 4 strokes clear of the chasing pack in the race for this year's HDNL Boys Golf Championship. The impressive Gardner carded a round of 82 at Baywood Golf and Country Club on Monday for the 4th best score of the day, and that was good enough to put some distance between him and the field in the season standings with 2 rounds remaining. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, and Ray Hamill. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.